Good morning or good afternoon. Welcome to Swiss Re's Half Year 2019 Results Conference Call. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Christian Mumenthaler, Group CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning and good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our Half Year 2019 Results Q&A call. I'm here with John Dacey, our Group CFO, Eddie Schmid, our Group Chief Underwriting Officer, Andreas Berger, the CEO of Corporate Solutions, and Philip Rahin, our Head of Investor Relations. Before we go to Q&A, I will make a few comments to put today's reported information into context. Andreas will complement this by adding some additional color on Corporate Solutions. The group reported a net income of $953 million for the first half of 2019, supported by the strong results of our reinsurance business unit and reflecting an excellent investment result. I want to emphasize the very strong performance of P&C Re despite significant adverse claims development of Typhoon Jebi in Q1. The enhanced earnings power of P&C Re is in an improved pricing environment is supported by our core strength. The scale of the business coupled with a flat expense base, the diversification via Life and Health Re, our unparalleled client access, and the expertise and risk knowledge built over many decades. In the year-to-date renewals, we found attractive opportunities to deploy capital and expect our pre-tax earnings to increase by more than $350 million as premiums are earned. Life and Health Reinsurance continues to deliver very good results, supported by improved mortality experience in the Americas and portfolio management actions. In Corporate Solutions, we have now completed the previously announced business and reserve review, implementing decisive management actions to put the business unit back on track to profitability. The group has contributed $600 million of capital into Corporate Solutions, restoring its SST capital position to a level which we consider adequate. Andreas will tell you more about Corporate Solutions in a few moments. On to Life Capital, we obviously spent a lot of time and effort in H1 preparing for the ReAssure IPO. Unfortunately, market conditions were not favorable, and we decided to suspend the process. We still aim to consolidate this business, to deconsolidate this business, and will continue to act in shareholders' best interest. And with that, I'll hand over to Andreas.
Thanks, Christian, and good afternoon to everyone also from my side. I'd like to make a few remarks on the work undertaken at Corporate Solutions since I took over on 1st of March this year. We conducted a comprehensive review of our portfolio and left no stone unturned. Specifically, we looked at historic profitability and volatility, both for Corporate Solutions and for the market, potential market size, legal trends, as well as our ability to efficiently service customers and provide a product that is differentiated from competitors. Through this thorough review, we identified the business lines where we wanted to focus our profitability growth and those which needed to be addressed. The pruning actions focused on 35% of the book and are expected to decrease our premiums by approximately 20% of our book. The remaining portfolio is in much better shape, and we also benefit from the positive rate momentum observed in commercial insurance. In the first half of 2019, the risk-adjusted price quality of Corporate Solutions portfolio improved by 9%. We expect pricing momentum to continue in the second half, but also beyond that. As part of our detailed reserve review, we analyzed case reserves, mostly related to prior accident year large losses, and strengthened reserves where appropriate. The majority of the development was in recent accident years, 2017 and 18. From a line of business perspective, liability, predominantly North America liability, and property were the most impacted. In order to protect Corporate Solutions' backbook, an adverse development cover was put in place with P&C Reinsurance Business Unit, and we have set up our tactical and strategic reinsurance protection to reduce volatility going forward. As another outcome of our strategic review, I have installed a new management team, our executive committee for CorSo, ensuring all parts of our business are represented at our leadership table. This ensures that our decisions taken are based on input from all relevant areas and that we deliver to our customers quickly and consistently across geographies. We're confident that these decisive actions will drive a turnaround in the performance of Corporate Solutions and expect to achieve 98% combined ratio in 2021. With that, I'll hand over to Philip to introduce the Q&A session.
Thank you, Andreas, and good day to all of you also from my side. So as usual, before we start the Q&A, I'd like to remind you to please restrict yourselves to two questions each, and then register again if you have follow-up questions. So without operator, could we please take the first question?
The first question comes from Andrew Ritchie from Autonomous. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. I think the first question is for Eddie. Could you give us a sense as to what the nominal rate increase was year to date and in July if you didn't allow for higher loss costs? So I think your plus one and plus two has some reflection of higher loss costs in it. And on renewal, are you playing in the very high layers? Because I noticed your NatCat PML went up considerably again from the year end, but obviously that's not matched by the sort of volume of NatCat premium. So where exactly is the best priced NatCat business in the US now? What layer is it being found at? And secondly, on Corso, I'm still not sure of the longer term ambition. Is it still to generate a 10 to 15% ROE? It doesn't look like the 98 combined in today's interest rate environment with a book that's becoming shorter tail is enough to get you there. And also on the strategy, is it still the aim to expand into global master and generally just further down the layers from excess? Is that still the long-term ambition? Thanks.
Thanks, Andrew. I think it's more like four questions, but that's okay. So go ahead, Eddie.
Okay, on the first one, Andrew, regarding the price increase, and how does this relate to, let's say, adjustment to models? That's basically what you're asking about. So, yeah, we have adjusted our loss models in some part of the business where we had new learnings. In Japan, out of Chebi, we adjusted the models to some extent, and obviously there was the experience with the wildfires in California where we also took action and made the loss models a bit more conservative. So the 1% does actually reflect this. So without these adjustments, the price increase would look a bit better, but it's fair to say this would not make a huge difference. Obviously, we need to see this 1% is across a very broad-based portfolio, which has a lot of cat business, but also big quota share business. So the 1% really needs to be seen in that context. So it would be a bit better, but even I think 1% across this very diverse portfolio is a significant improvement, which also explains why our combined ratio estimate moved from 100 2 years ago, 99 last year, and now we are comfortable to get to the 98. And the second part of your question is regarding the net cat growth. It's fair to say that this is geared more towards the peak perils, Hurricane US, earthquake. So the increase in exposure measured in value at risk, which we disclose externally, is more pronounced than the increase in premium and expected loss. So that explains why it's not moving in sync. I don't think it can put out any, let's say, layers, which we prefer. It's really across the board. We look at it on a client and deal by deal basis. Also, quite a few of these cat deals are structured in the form of a transaction, so it's not really possible to point to any one area. So there's a lot of factors that really come together and boil down to what we think is now a very adequately priced cat portfolio. That's why we felt very comfortable to deploy more capital. We're confident it will turn into an attractive return on capital because we have all the diversification, and it will boil down to significant contribution to earnings at the end of the day.
Okay, I'll take the Corso question, Andreas, here. First of all, on your ROE target, we have no reason to change the ROE target for Corso, which stands at 10 to 15%. With our ambition and target for 2021 with 98%, we think we should end up at the lower end of our target corridor. So we're pretty comfortable on that one. On the longer-term ambition, first of all, the focus this time here for the half-year results is profitability, restore profitability to set the foundation for future growth. And we'll come back in November, obviously, at the Investor Day to be a bit more specific on our strategy going forward with the strategic vision. We call it Strategic Vision 23+. Now, on your primary lead, all I can say is, yes, this is the right move. It's quite logical that for a company like Swiss Re and Swiss Re Corporate Solutions, with the expertise, the risk knowledge, and everything on technical capabilities that we have, we should drop down from excess positions. We should go down from wholesale markets more to where the risk is, to primary layers, because that's where we can differentiate and where you also get the premium levels that you require in order to sustainably meet also your target on the ROE side. I think we can declare victory in penetrating the primary lead markets. We've invested a lot of money into people, into capabilities, and I think this is a tick in the box for us. On the Global Master Program business, this is sort of my home turf. I truly believe that there are very few players who really could play in this segment. We are probably one of the few ones that have identified a key differentiator, which is the delivery of the program. A lot of competitors in this segment struggle due to IT legacy. We've developed a state-of-the-art technology platform to deliver global master programs. I think this is something we're going to capitalize on, and you will hear much more on our November Investor Day. But I'm very comfortable and very confident that we would have success with this one. That's the feedback that we get from clients and from brokers.
Great. Thanks, Andrew, for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question comes from Kamran Hossain from RBC. Please go ahead.
Hi. Afternoon, everyone. Two questions. The first one, coming back to Corso, I mean, my read of it is it's a bit, you know, it looks like an exceptionally good job there. I'm really pleased you're addressing it. But when you think about Corso, it might not be one for Andreas, it might be one for Christian, but could you maybe talk about the similarities between the life and health changes a few years ago and the corporate solutions changes, restructuring changes, etc., that you've announced today? Is this, you know, what's your degree of confidence in a, you know, here, you know, we make changes here and then we can move on and just expect much better results? So that's the first question. The second question, saw the comments about ReAssure and, you know, committed to reducing the stake. You didn't make any comment about the second tranche of the buyback. How should we think about that for now? Thank you.
Thanks, Cameron. So on the comparison with life and health, it's actually an interesting question. So to me, there's some parallels and some differences. I think the parallel I would drive is that when a business starts to get into trouble, it's not a good idea to bleed it out over many years, even though that might be the first instinct because it's too hard to face reality. So I think clearly my aim was to take on the learnings from life and health and apply them to corporate solutions, which is why so much work has gone into these two quarters, right? And on all different aspects, and the choices we made are painful. I think the difference is that obviously life and health is a much less volatile business. Right? In Corso, with whatever we do, if there's a big NatCat, it's going to hit Corso, and there's not much I can do. Whereas in life and health, I think some of these results are much smoother and easier to predict. What is also difficult to predict is ultimately where will the trends go in U.S. casualty in particular, where we saw some underlying trends increase. We had to make some assumptions, but obviously nothing is ever certain. So I'd say we tried our best. We also, through the ADC cover, protect some of the old reserves. I wanted to make sure the team has a real chance to start from here, but I'm also aware that there are some, and you are aware that there are some risk factors which could affect them. But I would hope that the underlying program that Andreas has come up with, to me, is very plausible and executable because of price increases in the market. I mean, we can prune. Pruning is part of it, but I think, frankly, it's the price increases which are really, really needed and necessary and coming through at this stage, which make this plan, in my view, executable. Do you want to, John?
With respect to the share buyback, first of all, I'll just reiterate that the first tranche of $1 billion is well on track. As of yesterday, We've completed about 45% of it and look to continue to execute that over the coming months. As we said before, the second tranche is not dependent necessarily on the ReAssure IPO, but rather more broadly on the excess capital position during the course of the year and the second half of the year in particular. Unambiguously, I think it's safe to say that not doing the ReAssure IPO will make it a little less likely that we find ourselves with excess capital after we finish the first tranche of the buyback. But let's see how the next 3 months go, and we will give you a update, I think, on October 31st when we release our Q3 results. Obviously, there's a lot of moving parts here. The good news is we're finding the ability to deploy real capital in the P&C re business as well as in life and health, but with a fairly strong first half and expectations of a strong second half of the year, we will build back up the earnings and therefore the overall capital of the group.
Thanks, Cameron, for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question is from the line of Vikram Gandhi from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Hi, it's Vikram SocGen. Thank you for taking my questions. Firstly, on cost, referring to slides 17 and 19, I'm a bit confused as to how should we interpret the 9% rate increase in the first half alone against the 6 percentage points combined ratio improvement from rate increases by 2021. Is it just because the expected losses has changed, or is there something else? And secondly, on P&C Re, on the one hand, it's, you know, the slides 30 and 31 say the price increases for the NatCat business were mostly flat, apart from the loss-affected treaties, while on the other hand, we see that the NatCat exposure has increased significantly. So just wondered why the sudden increase in appetite, despite the rating momentum clearly not that strong. Thank you very much.
So, of course, the 9% rate increase, this is a risk-adjusted increase. The 9% in first half of 2019 reflects the year-on-year increase in risk-adjusted price quality of corporate solutions on the total portfolio. That also includes 2% pruning and business mix changes and 7% pure rate changes. The 7% rate changes is only for the first half of the year. So what you find in this walk, in the combined ratio walk, this is obviously then projected also to the 3 years until 2021. That is the difference.
Yeah, do you want to take the P&C Re question?
Yeah, so the question is that the NatCat price increases this year seem rather moderate while we grow a lot. I think that's at the gist of the question. If you look at it a bit over 2 years, I think out of the record loss year 17, we pushed a lot for price increases into 18, and we could achieve a significant quality improvement of the book, but we also let go quite a bit of shares. Into this year now, in a further improving pricing environment, even though not massively, it made a lot of sense for us to recapture shares, but also grow the NatCat business. Because the quality we have in our book and we can achieve in the market clearly is attractive, given our global diversification and the life and health diversification. This NatCat business achieves a very attractive return on capital. What we've seen in this year, that business that has been significantly loss affected, like wind business in Japan or Florida business, we saw significant rate increases, 15%. But it's fair to say, in a lot of other places, pricing line was more flattish. But the quality of the business we put on board is very adequate. And that's why it made a lot of sense to deploy more capital into that space. What we've also done, we ceded a bit more to third-party capital investors. So the business that goes beyond our appetite cannot be readily diversified. We cede more to some long-term third-party capital providers to make sure overall we keep a balanced book and are within our risk appetite. But it's a very attractive space, the NatCat area, where we have demonstrated over many years that we understand this risk very well, so we feel very comfortable to deploy more capital, and we are confident it will turn into good contribution to earnings.
All right, thanks, Vikram, for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question is from Edward Morris from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, everyone. Thanks for taking my questions. The first is just on the $350 million that you talk about, the increase in net earnings from renewals achieved so far year to date. I wonder if you could just help us in thinking about how quickly that is likely to earn through into the results. And also, if we take into account how interest rates have evolved over the course of the year, where does that put you relative to your 10 to 15% ROE ambition in P&C? And then secondly, Eddie, just picking up on that point about the increased use of third-party capital for NatCat business, something that Swiss Re hasn't in the past done a huge amount of. I wonder if you could just elaborate on why now you've decided to do more of that. Is it because you're getting closer to your thresholds of what you would like in NatCat, or if you could just talk a bit more about that strategic change? Thanks.
John, you want to take the first part?
Sure. So on the $350 million, you should expect that gets earned, I think, largely over the next 2 years. There might be a little bit of a tail into a third year. But, the business that's come on, starting with January 1, April, June, July renewals, all we expect to help out here. Also, don't forget that part of the strength of this portfolio was some relatively short tail SME focused casualty underwriting that we put in place with a publicly identified transaction with AmTrust at the beginning of the year. So net, we're comfortable with these new earnings. The point you mentioned about decreasing interest rates is a challenge for us. It's a challenge for the industry. We're pretty proud of being able to maintain the running yield at 2.9% in the first half of this year. We'll be challenged to keep that up going into 2020 if rates continue their recent path here. But in the meantime, I think we're comfortably in place with our target return on equity of in P&C Re when we get our combined ratio delivering it at 98%. If the price rises that we've seen coming through during the course of this year continue, I think we should be comfortable also in 2020 with the underwriting of the book. With respect to the retrocessions, I'd argue that this is not necessarily a change of strategy, just an expansion of some capabilities that we've always had. But Eddie, why don't you explain where we are?
Yeah, thanks, John, for the lead-in. I mean, it's fair to say Swiss was at the forefront to establish third-party capital maybe 20 years ago by introducing ILS and so on and so forth. And it's fair to say we have always been using third-party capital, but we didn't make a big fuss about it as maybe other players have done. But it's clearly, we believe NatCat is a very attractive business for the Swiss Re balance sheet, given the diversification, our client franchise, the proprietary risk modeling we have. We are a natural home. So it's clearly our ambition to remain a leader in the NatCat business. And given the growth by just all the risk factors, the concentration of values in exposed areas, all these together just means this is a growing risk pool where we want to play substantially. And we obviously have a certain maximum appetite for Hurricane US and some other peak perils, so we get, for some of these perils, close to this level. So for us, it makes sense then to get as much of this attractive business on our balance sheet, diversified. But where it becomes too big, there it makes sense to share it with some long-term third-party capital investors. So we've done that in the past, and given the growth outlook, we just prepare that we can also use more of that as we see fit.
All right. And just for the absence of doubt, the vast majority of the business we write gross remains on our balance sheet net.
Yeah, thanks for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question comes from the line of Jonny Urwin from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my questions. Just focusing on reserves. So did you spot anything in P&C re-reserving that warrants attention or discussion during the Corso reserve review? What drove the P&C Re reserve additions in casualty in the period? And what are your expectations for casualty reserve development from here in the context of some peers flagging higher social inflation? Thank you.
Eddie, you want to take it there?
Yeah, I can take the P&C Re. reserving question. So as we have said, prior year development overall was negative by 5.1% in terms of combined ratio points. The majority of that comes from the Chevy strengthening, which we did in Q1. Otherwise, if you break it down to lines of business, there was some positive on special lines. Property obviously was quite negative, driven by Chevy, compensated a bit by some favorable from the hurricanes in 17. And then you have the casualty reserves, which developed slightly negatively during the first half of the year. That was stemming from U.S., but only from two isolated client cases. Overall, we feel very comfortable with the reserve level, also the U.S. one. As we have explained in the past, we reflected all the claim strengths and everything in the U.S., so what we have put up now as the reserves there is in our view, adequate. I think that's on the reserves.
I think part of the question was also the look through from Corso, the learnings from Corso, both underwriting and claim side. Maybe you can say a few words.
Yeah, obviously it's important to always compare the two parts. I think one clear element of the Corso learning is that we were overexposed to U.S. liability, particularly the large corporate risk. I think we have flagged that already in the past, that we have clearly spotted that as a general industry trend, that large corporate risk, the development of the court decisions, the settlement, just have exploded over the last few years. And that's clearly an area we have addressed on both sides. So on Corso, we have taken significant actions to reduce that part, but also in reinsurance, we moderate this. Or we can say the reinsurance casualty portfolio is a much more diversified business. So it's much more global, much less U.S. focused, and it has a much broader underlying risk basis. So it's much less focused on these large corporate risks. It has a lot of mid-market and also SME business. That's why the reserve base also in reinsurance is much more diversified and not exposed to these, let's say, very large individual large limits. And you can also see it in the loss triangles we publish that the reinsurance reserves are much more predictable and robust in nature.
Okay, good. Thank you, Johnny, for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question comes from the line of Sami Taipalus from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, everyone. The first one is just on the SST ratio. I know you haven't disclosed a number for H1, but is it possible to give, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. Is it possible to give some sort of steer on where you are there? And can you just remind us, you know, the second buyback, would that be, you know, to avoid building the ratio versus where it was at year end, or should we think about it relative to, you know, your target levels of capital? So that's number one. Number two, you know, it seems like your business is getting a bit more capital intensive as you move into more NatCat business, and, you know, obviously the duration of the casualty book has shrunk as well. So should we expect that there's a mix shift impact on the combined ratio going into 2020 as well as a sort of tailwind on pricing? Thank you.
Sure, Sammy. So let me start with the SST. As you say, there are a lot of moving parts here, and we will give you the July 1st estimate of the SST when we report our Q3 results on October 31st. To help you a little bit with direction, obviously the capital deployed in P&C Re has been will have ceteris paribus reduced the SST ratio. The first billion of growth was already in on the January 1 renewals, and so that would have been in the 251 number that we published as of January 1. The second billion would be worked through, and you should think of that to be a reduction of available capital for us, or utilization of capital. I think on market movements, we've got countervailing forces. Credit spreads have tightened in the U.S. and U.K., and that's probably positive for us. Somewhere between 30 and 40 basis points, depending on the market. On the other hand, interest rates moving down by 60 to 70 basis points will reduce the SST numbers for us. And that second one is probably going to be a larger impact, at least in the first 6 months, than the credit spread. So financial markets net-net will be negative. The deployment in PNC Re will also be a reduction. We've had the earnings, which are reasonable, I think, for the first half of the year. But as we continue to deploy capital, you should not necessarily expect a lot of other positive moves absent something in the markets. So I think we'll see where we are, and we'll also see what happens during the next 3 months of the hurricane season.
The second part of the question was around the business mix and kind of impact on duration. I think that's the question. I think it's fair to say, looking at the growth we've achieved this year in P&C Re so far, was NatCat was a driver, and a lot of casualty transactions. But the underlying business is mainly short duration SME type, which is also short duration. So there is a bit of shift to shorter tail, and it's also fair to say in our portfolio outlook, given we see the attractiveness of NatCat and some other short tail lines, there will be a bit of a shift. But given the broad diversification of the book, I think the mix and also duration is quite robust, so it doesn't change rapidly over time. But with a slight shift to a bit shorter tail, that is a fair assumption into next year.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Sammy, for your questions. Can we add the next question, please?
The next question is from Simon Fussmeier from Vontobel. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, it's Simon. First question is for John, I guess. Can you elaborate what you think is the return on investment on the capital injection into ReAssure and also the $600 million that you invest into Corso? And the second question, I guess, goes to Andreas. On the reserve addition that you're taking in Corso, is this a, shall we say, academically actuarial reserve addition, or did you put in a little bit of a safety cushion there? Thank you.
Thanks, Simon. Look, I think our belief is the $600 million that we injected into the corporate solutions business positions that business to be successful in the future. As Andreas mentioned earlier, we expect in 2021 to return not only to an underwriting profit, but to a return on equity that's within the range, probably at the lower end of that range of profitability. So when we think about the IRR of this capital, it's linked to the long-term earnings capability of Corso, and I think we're pretty comfortable that's a reasonably robust return. On the capital put into ReAssure, I think there is a little different story. Again, in preparation for the IPO, we moved the Solvency II capital level from where it had been at around 120% up to something close to 145%. That required a total injection of 480 million pounds, of which we put in 75%, about 360 million pounds. Again, in the long-term value creation of ReAssure, we're confident that this will have a fine return. To give you a sense of, you know, what that could look like, the dividend yield that we had calculated for ReAssure, had it priced at the lower end of the IPO range, would have been a 9.5% dividend yield, to give you one parameter of the kinds of returns that this business is capable of. We obviously didn't do the IPO, but we're confident about the business's ability to deliver. We talk in the document sent out this morning about the 2.1 billion pounds that we expect ReAssure to generate in gross cash generation over the next 5 years, in 2019 included. And you know, with that kind of cash generation, We think the $265 million of dividend that they committed to is entirely feasible. If we own 75% of that, that will be a nice return.
Okay, I'll take the case reserve question, whether there's some cushion or buffer built in. Again, I can only repeat, as we did the strategic review, we looked at the portfolio and at all cases. And here I must say, we looked at all the rules that we had in place, the timeliness, the accuracy of the claims reserves. And then the round tables, we looked at the low, the high point, the midpoint, and all available information that was at hand led us then to a best estimate. And this is exactly what we have seen here in the numbers in Q2. In general, we can say that we already saw a trend that started a couple of quarters before. That was a trend that we acknowledged, and we saw increased number of claims, not only at the large end now, but also at the actually the medium-sized one, meaning the claims between the 5 and 10 million range. So before, we have only looked at, predominantly looked at the large ones, and then we saw that below the 10 million range, we saw an increased number of claims closer to the 8 to 10 million, and I think that's a reflection of what we have done here. So best estimate is exactly the right term here.
Thanks, Simon, for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question is from Farooq Hanif from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Good afternoon, everybody. Just going to the adverse development cover, to give us a sense or some confidence on whether that will feed through into P&C Re, can you give us an idea maybe of the confidence level that you price that at or perhaps the size of reserves that the $100 million pertains to, just so we get an idea maybe of, that if you're charging an arm's length price, what is that risk as a percentage of the book that you are pricing in? And maybe secondly, going back to the $2.1 billion capital generation in Sterling in ReAssure. If I remember correctly, that included re-risking benefits, which under SST were difficult to put into place. Are you going to be willing to let that business unit now run and price on a Solvency II basis and maybe take some short-term pain on an SST basis to allow them to sort of continue with the plan that they had before anyway? Including re-risking. Thank you.
Okay, I can give a bit of color around the ADC. I mean, the starting was really what Andreas has been explaining, that we did a lot of diligence to review the case reserves in corporate solution. And the ADC now attaches at this what we think is really a prudent level of reserves in the Corso back book. And that was also, again, as we always do it, reviewed in an independent matter by group actuarial control, also confirming that the new reserve base is really at a prudent level. And then on that level, reinsurance P&C was comfortable to provide that ADC cover. And then also we structured it in a way that only 80% of the risk goes to P&C Re. So Andreas Berger and team is still on the hook with 20% to have some alignment of interest. And what is important that as for any other transaction between two business units, this has to be obviously done at arm's length. So on the P&C Re side, this goes through the normal underwriting and transactional review process as any other deal. So they come up with their own view. And in the end, they feel comfortable at this price that this makes sense to be put on their balance sheet. And also after this reserve strengthening course, so putting it at a prudent level, it did make actually sense to then keep the residual reserve risk within the group. Otherwise, again, we would just cede some margin out of the firm, but we have the capital to hold that residual risk. But at the end of the day, it is a transaction that is at arm's length, and P&C Reinsurance felt comfortable at that price to take the risk with the structuring and everything we have put in place.
And just for the absence of doubt, there is a certain asymmetry to this cover where P&C Re is responsible for 80% of any deterioration, should there be deterioration, but Corso will actually get 80% of the upside if we find that our reserves are in some cases redundant. So I think the there's a balance here, but the underlying point is we believe the reserves are well set as the starting point. With respect to the reassure gross cash, the $2.1 billion, you're exactly right. There is a belief that there would be a re-risking component to that. I'd make a couple observations. One, I mentioned before the capital that we've injected into reassure, most of that actually came over from Life Capital, which had the capital already in the business unit. A relatively small amount came from the group. But that provides them with a stronger capital base to be able to manage a couple of things, including the potential adjustment of asset risks for the company. Your larger point, I think, is as we consolidate that up to the group SST, are we prepared for that hit? And I think within reasonable bounds, probably yes. But again, this is a five-year plan. And as we've said, our midterm objective is to find the means to reduce our stake from the current 75% to 49%. I hope that doesn't take 5 years. If we don't see any good answer and we're getting our dividends, we may hold on to it, but my expectation is that in this time horizon, we will become a minority owner and the freedom on the risks, asset risk side will be unmitigated.
Okay, thanks, Farouk, for your questions. Can we take the next question, please?
The next question comes from Vinit Malhotra from Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity. Just two questions, please. So one is a follow-up, if you like, on buyback, and the second one is on the call, so please. So on the buyback, just it's obvious that SST is a bit lower than the 250 you last reported. But if we think of a scenario where interest rates remain where they are next 3 months, and if the hurricanes or large losses are within the budget, does that make this buyback a bit more likely, or there's no such probability equations in your mind? So I just want to understand how you think of, because basically the interest rates and the hurricanes are the two unknowns. Secondly, just on the corporate solutions, this concept of pruning is obviously needed, but in the past, we've also heard from Christian that we're not trying to slow this business too much or, you know, not shrink it to greatness, as was the phrase, I think, and also seeing a 7-8% growth rate now. So, Andreas, are we looking at actually a lower volume base in Corso going forward, or are you saying that there is the shrinkage in this 20% of the 900 million, but you will be very open to finding the growth or you'll be open to making it up somewhere else? Thank you very much.
John, you take the first question.
I'll try. So with respect to the buyback, I'd say, we'll look at the comprehensive capital position of the group towards the end of the third quarter. Those two items that you mentioned, interest rates and large losses or nat cat losses, will be part of the factors. We haven't changed our long-term target for the SST of 220. Our starting point at the beginning of the year was 251. We built the optionality of a second buyback to deal with the situation where we found ourselves with unambiguously excess capital. I think, as I mentioned before, the absence of the IPO reduces the probability, but let's see where we are towards the end of the Q3, and as I said, we'll give you clarity on our intentions on October 31st.
I think it may be worthwhile repeating what I said before on why did we have this second potential tranche. It came from last November. We had a SST ratio of 280, which is really very high, the highest we had in a long time. And as we did the business plan, we were worried that it was clear that this year there could be a series of factors, including recovery in financial market, IPO, low NACAT, et cetera. There could be a combination which would lead a year later to an even higher one, which is not really acceptable. So we said we would like to have this instrument at hand to avoid this situation for this particular case. And the time we want to take a decision is really in November, because that's when we have all the facts together. So I think it's very hard at this stage to say if this, but that, there's no formula in our head. We're not an autopilot. There's a real, you know, business decision to be taken in view of all the factors we'll have there. So it's not like we try to be difficult. It's really more, I try to make it clear what our intent was with this second buyback. So the goal is certainly not to be above 280. The risks are much lower right now with the IPO and the business, the capital could deploy. But who knows, right? And again, we're not on autopilot.
Yeah, I'll take the pruning question on Corso. No, we don't want to shrink to greatness. But what we did in our strategic review, we looked at the portfolio and created three different buckets. One bucket was portfolios where we will not see sustainable improvement of risk exposure and price to risk. So those areas we said to ourselves, we will not be able to influence this market. We don't have the size and the leadership position to influence this market, so we will have to take action here. So that's where we reduce significantly our engagement. That's the bucket number one. And number two is the bucket where we said we're so subscale in this market, we will in the foreseeable future not reach a position of a leader, a market leader, to also bring in our strengths to differentiate as well. So that's another area we said, if you don't make money in those areas and can't scale up properly, so why being there? Because we can't bring in our strengths. And the third area are risk sub-portfolios, where we believe it might be an attractive market, but the way we're trading and handling the risk is not efficient. So it could be a market inefficiency, it could be ourselves. So that's something we look in detail into it. And marine, for instance, is such a market where we say we'd like to be in the marine market, but not in the way it is traded today. So you can't operate with a almost like 40% expense ratio in that market. That's not sustainable. Here we would like to redefine how marine can be done mostly digitally in future. And you've seen that we have created a Chief Innovation and Transformation Officer. That's a signal already for the future strategy. Now, the risk landscape is changing dramatically. Yeah? And I think now is the time to address profitability, to restore profitability in order to set the foundation for future growth. And I think it requires really fresh thinking and fresh ideas and solutions to bring to the parties. The clients welcome this. We have the right positioning, we have the right ingredients and assets to bring to the party to really address the risk management changes in the industry. And we're very confident that we can do this. I already mentioned one area with the global program platform that we're providing, but I'd like to give this detail more in our November Investor Day, if you may.
Thanks, Vinit, for your questions. Can we take the next question, please?
The next question is from the line of James Shuck from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. My first question, again, on Corso. So you show the bridge on the combined ratio from a normalized level of 110 in 2018 down to the 98. I think about the portfolio pruning, the rate increases, and the expense savings. Most of those will be earning through in the sort of second half of 19 into 20 and into 2021. The slide on slide 15, though, is showing that the combined ratio for Corso, excluding the kind of management actions and the impact from the ADC, is actually running at 101 in H1 2019. So can you just help me square that as a starting point versus 110 as a starting point? Second question, thinking about the group ROE target. So Corso, we're now looking at an ROE at the lower end of the 10 to 15%. You'll be holding on to ReAssure for the foreseeable future, which obviously has a low single digit ROE. It looks like you've deployed $2 billion of capital in the period just gone for $350 million of earnings pre-tax over 2 years, which looks like a net of tax return on solvency capital around 7%. I guess when I pull all that together and think about your target for 700 basis points over US risk-free, which is currently around 2%, I'm sort of looking at that and thinking, it looks a little bit challenging in order to hit that as a cross-the-cycle target. So maybe you just give an update on how you see that group ROE target, please. Thank you.
Okay, I'll start with the first part of the question on your combined ratio on slide 15. It's fair to say that in Q1 and Q2, I think we had the underlying business that we brought on book is actually very good. We had a benign nat cat situation. So overall, I think we were very happy, also in particular with the rate increases that we could generate. So we're very healthy as far as the new business, and I think going forward, this will look very good. So the point we tried to make here on page 15 and the gap between the 132.8 and 101.2 is really the management actions. And here, it's fair to say we had two buckets of management actions. It's in Q1 and Q2. And as we said, in Q2, we had a reserve impact after the review of 328 million. This is subdivided into prior year reserving and in current year reserving. Yeah, so those are the two buckets. Now, if you look at the first half year and only look at the prior year development, then you take the Q1 225 and now the Q2 264, which brings you then to the 489 first half year prior year development. So that's the situation. And then if you add again the adverse cover development cover with 100 million, this will bring you then to a H1 219 management actions number of 653 million. So that sort of gives you the overall picture of maybe that slide 15.
And James, just my quick answer to the question is, yeah, the first half was actually pretty benign, and that's where Andrea started with for Corso's core business, NatCat especially. So the 110 is the right place to start this walk. We expect a glide path through 2020 to get to the 21 X target of a 98 combined ratio. With respect to the group ROE, the continued ownership of 75, not 100% of ReAssure will be a drag on ROE. But as I suggested before, the price firming that we see both in PNC Re as well as Corso lead us to think that the opportunities to make money in these lines is significant on a going forward basis. I'm not concerned about the group's target of 700 basis points over the 10-year risk-free. And as you say, right now we're diving down to something very close to 2% for that U.S. benchmark. We will work through the asset side of the balance sheet as best we can, but those financial targets, I think, are entirely achievable by the business mix we have.
Yeah, if I may add, right, because I think it's an important question. I mean, we're fully committed to this group ROE target. Everything is feasible. You can see the underlying with 98 is maybe 11.5 ROE in P&C Re, but that's hopefully that's not the end of it, right? We still see some price increases. Overall, the P&C Re market is still in the softer side of the cycle. So I think you can expect a bit more there. Then Corso, we had to get certainly to the lower end of this range by 2021. Clearly, we need to do something about ReAssure. I mean, that's a key focus, and I think it would be wrong to assume just because we didn't do an IPO now that we're going to have it for 5 years. As you said, I mean, the goal is clear, and it's midterm, and I think we talk about 1 year, 2 years, but it's, in my view, if we can do it for the right price for the shareholders, obviously, but it's clear there's a focus on that. And then the excess capital is being deployed as we talk. I mean, the earnings are on top. The gap capital doesn't change. So, I mean, I think we're very focused on that. It just takes time from where we are. It's clearly two businesses have now just crossed a bad soft cycle.
Thank you, James, for your questions. Can we take the next question, please?
The next question is from the line of Frank Kopfinger from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. I have also two questions. My first question is on ReAssure and coming to your back to your point, Christian, on the potential environment you're looking for to restart this project again. I mean, we are potentially at peak equity levels and bond yields are potentially further declining from here. So what could be the environment you're looking at and or what would be the catalyst here? And then secondly, on corporate solutions, in the past, whenever you presented combined ratios, you always pointed also to a drag of 3 to 4 percentage points coming from your investment expenses. How should we look, think about those in the context of this new 98% target? Are they also reflected in, or do you don't have any more investment expenses anymore, so you have a 3 to 4% release? How are they reflected?
Good. So I guess the ReAssure question. You know, I think about 70% of the work that's been done now for the IPO preparation is something we're going to use anyway, because it allows us to extract ReAssure from the Swiss Re Group, but in a much bigger extent. So all the functions were folded in. We have a new CEO. We have a board. We have basically a new management team. We recapitalize it at a standalone level and all of that. And so that's precious work, and we won't bring that back. So I think what needs to happen now is that the new management team needs to execute on the plan they have. There's a prospectus, there's planned dividends, there's a lot of things. Some of the investor feedback was that the management team is new and they're not proven, right? So I think they have now a good opportunity to prove themselves. We decided clearly not to go for an IPO at the second half of the year because there's a new time window in the second half. But I think in view of the political situation right now, that would be unwise to kill everybody in the work to do that. So I think the next day to look at it is probably early 2020 to see where the markets are, what is here. You know, I think an asset yielding 9.5% is in a market like the UK with pension funds and local investors who are not caring about the pound, for example, is not a completely unreasonable. I think it's an attractive opportunity, honestly, for local investors. So I'm not particularly worried about this the value of this asset over a medium term. So I think it's only a question of time. And obviously, if there should there be any other opportunities, we will also look at other opportunities. But I think we have several potential ways to continue the deconsolidation of this asset, and we're going to pursue them.
And Frank, maybe the one thing I would say, what we found in the marketplace, while equity markets broadly and in the UK specifically seem to be functioning fine in the end of June, early July, the primary market was a different story. And the combination of a couple other IPOs which had gone out the door and performed badly, and an emerging concern by institutional investors about putting new money into the UK just created an environment where this appeared very, very difficult. You can claim that our aspirations on price might have been too high. We'll evaluate that over time, but I do think that the weakness in the pound that we've seen in the subsequent weeks is indicative of concerns that were emerging as we were trying to build the book for the IPO. And that's the first case. With the second case on Corso, maybe I'll jump in first, and Andreas can talk about a bit, but a lot of this comes from before Andreas's time. You're exactly right. We have been making these investments both in the primary lead capabilities as well as some other technologies. Most of that will, in fact, finish by 2021, but I don't expect Corso to not invest. There will be important technology-related moves that we will expect to continue. Having said that, the 98 is a firm number and doesn't have caveats around it. It's not 98 plus 2 points. It's 98.
Yeah, I mean, just to maybe elaborate on that, when we did the review, we obviously looked also into the expenses, and then investments were always singled out as 3 to 4 percentage points. And we saw that the investments went mainly into the primary lead initiative. And the primary lead initiative had three buckets. One was domestic primary leads. So we hired people, we developed the skills and the capabilities. And I think this went actually quite well. So we see a much stronger engagement in this primary lead. And so not everything is bad. So those lines of businesses where we are very strong, that's primarily due to the primary lead investment. And the second bucket was additional lines of businesses. For instance, accident and health. We acquired a company and portfolios in this area. So those are all initiatives that were under the flag or under the heading of primary lead. And the third bucket was the international program platform, the international business program platform. Now, the first two that I mentioned, I would say, you know, let's declare victory. Those are basically running out, those investments, and they are business as usual. The third one, that's an area where we are going to drill deeper. We still continue to invest. So what you see in the walk of the combined ratio slide, you will see 2% expense savings. This is on a gross basis, actually 2.5%. And then, you know, you deduct the investments, in particular on this side of the technology platform, and that brings you then to the 2%. So we continue to invest. And again, in our Investor Day in November, we're going to be a bit more specific about what that means for the strategy going forward.
Thank you, Frank, for your questions. Can we take the next question, please?
The next question comes from the line of William Hawkins from KBW. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much. Just one small one. Can you update us on where the absolute level is of risk-adjusted price quality for PNC Re and Corso after these rate increases? From memory, the last time you gave us a PNC Re figure, it was 103% at the beginning of last year. So given that you've had 1 or 2 points of rate increase, I'm guessing that figure's quite easily 104, 105%. But I've no idea where Corso is. It's good you've had the 9% rate increase, but I don't know where that actually takes you absolutely. Thank you.
Do you want to take it?
Yeah, I think we stopped disclosing the long-term price adequacy we used in the past, because the main point we always want to make is what is really the price change comparing the renewal basis and the basis we put on our books. And then I think we change to new measure, which we explain is a more simple measure, which should be more comparable to also what peers disclose, and on that measure we now say for the first half of the year the business we renew, this is 1 point better than the expiring. Yes, but it's fair to say that this is an improvement in price quality. It does not reflect some capital allocation or other things, but I would also then say this internal measure, this long-term price equity, is up a bit, but it's not a number that we disclose going forward.
That's also true for Corso.
Oh, Corso, yeah.
Okay, thank you, William, for your question. Can we take the next question, please?
The next question is a follow-up from Vikram Gandhi. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Very quickly on Corso, how do you define the normalized combined ratio? So how should we think about the average nat cat losses when we think about the 98% combined target? And then secondly, with respect to the aggressive pruning in some lines and growing in others, I'm assuming there must be a natural limit to doing this, as that would reduce the diversification. So any thoughts there would be welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. The Corso normalized loss ratio has a large net cat budget of $190 million for the full year 2019. We expect something north of 45 or something, 46% expected in the first half of this year. That's the main part of the combined ratio normalized.
Vikram, but the second part of your question, can you remind us?
The couple of actions, which is, one is the aggressive pruning of businesses while growing in others where there is good pricing. I'm assuming there must be a natural limit to doing this, as continuing this would reduce the diversification in the portfolio at some point. So any thoughts around that would be helpful.
Look, I'll jump in. I think there's both in terms of geographies, but also in lines of business, there remains a robust diversification even within Corso. And then when we think about within the group, the concentration on some of the more profitable lines is not going to be a problem for us. So I don't expect any particular issues with respect to either capital charges and or earnings concentration to be the issue here as the Corso portfolio gets rebalanced. I think the important thing you see on one of the pages when we talk about pruning, there's a number of lines where we're going to significantly reduce but not exit. Mm-hmm. And part of that is due to be able to serve clients that say that might be great clients for our property book and still ask for some covers, which we're prepared to do for those better clients.
Well, we actually came to the conclusion that the Corso portfolio was too concentrated, for example, in U.S. liability, and also it was not enough protected by reinsurance. So going forward with better reinsurance protection and a bit less, let's say, U.S. liability focus actually becomes a better diversified portfolio. But the diversification we mainly manage then as a group, and we can use reinsurance for Corso to get it all in balance.
Thanks, Vikram, for your questions. Can we take the next question, please?
The next question is a follow-up from the line of James Shuck. Please go ahead.
All right, thanks for taking my follow-up. Just a question on the new money rate, really. So can you just give us an idea of, as of today, what the new money rate is and what you're actually investing in? I obviously, U.S. rates are higher, but in Europe, the situation is very different. And it seems like yields around 50 basis points. So how are you thinking about risk-adjusted returns on investments, and what does this mean for your strategic asset allocation, please?
Sure. So I mean, you've correctly identified a challenge for us. Majority of our assets are dollar-related, reflecting the majority of our liabilities, and so the matching, the estimate, new money rate that we've got for the reinvestments is something close to 2%. That's below the running yield of 2.9, and obviously something we're going to have to manage. I would say that the asset management team has been able, in a challenging environment, to maintain that 2.9%, in part by going into some alternative investments, infrastructure, other plays, increasing in some cases parts of the real estate portfolio, which are providing solid yields, nothing exceptional, but adequate. The quality of the portfolio has not changed. We maintain a fairly conservative position on the credit book in particular, and I think that's also reflected in the de minimis level of impairments that we've had in the last quarters. So this will be a challenge to us going forward, as it will be a challenge to everyone in the industry. Let's see how we work through it.
Thank you, James, for your follow-up questions. Next question, please.
The next question is a follow-up from Edward Morris. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Just a quick follow-up, please. The reinsurance purchasing strategy going forward for Corso, could you just confirm whether you intend to consider buying reinsurance externally, or are you likely to continue just buying it from PNC Re? Thank you.
So, in principle, we prefer to buy internally, by PNC Reinsurance Business Unit. But we're not excluding external markets going forward. We are strategically positioning ourselves in buying reinsurance, and we will use external markets as well. But obviously, we prefer to use internal markets.
Yeah, it has already been in the past a combination that the business we like and it was within our overall risk tolerance should, as a first priority, stay on either the Corso or the reinsurance balance sheet. And only if it gets above what we can digest within our own balance sheet, we go externally. But it's important also for Corso to be a bit more direct in the market. It's also a feedback signal. So it's both. But first priority is to keep the risk. We can diversify our balance sheet internally.
Thank you, Ed, for your follow-up questions. This is actually the end of the Q&A sessions. There are no more questions. So if you have any follow-up questions, you don't hesitate. You reach out to any member of the IR team. Thank you again, everyone, for joining today.